Next week is, I don't know what Castle Rock is, but I think it's the Battle of Castle Rock or something.
That is where Handsome Knight, Incestuous Sister, and Peter Dinklage, that's like their
ancestral home. Oh, I thought they were in Westboro. Home.
What?
I thought they were in Westboro. Or
Westeros is like the entire kingdom. Castle Rock is like Ohio. You know what I mean? Like the Starks live in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think there's a battle there next week.
I've seen every episode.
I have. That's the sad thing. Like I watch it, and it's not like I'm doing other stuff. It's just like, oh,
there's
okay.
The Battle of Fraggle Rock, like, I think, is going to happen.
Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I watch it, and it's like, oh, that's cool. Oh, cool. White chick with dragons is pretty mad. Like, she's cute when they close up on her. Oh, okay. There's some naked slaves. Like, all right.
She's got some eyebrows on her. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're caterpillars. Like, I'm wanting them to, like, just crawl off her face at some point. It's awesome, I guess. Or, like, they should dye them. Because it's, like, yeah, I get it. Her hair is white.
I think she's perfect.
But those eyebrows are so distracting. Like, I can't really look at anything else because they're not white.
I like when she's angry.
I mean, she gets angry a lot.
Not like yesterday. Not like this week's episode. She was mad. She was real mad. What's up? This is Movies On Up. Back online. Back on duty. I'm Dave, joined by the Nancy Allen to my Peter Weller, Ryan.
You know, I kind of feel like I'm more of an Abby Cornish.
I don't like that.
I guess we're not
to
partners
Peter
in that
Weller?
Sense. Yeah, Abby, exactly. I'm mixing metaphors
two
here.
Two completely different people. Anyways, we are Movies On Up. The tagline this week, back online, back on duty. If you know what movie that's from, email us. MoviesOnUp@gmail.com, Facebook.com/MoviesOnUp, and MoviesOnUp.com. We had an overwhelming amount of winners last week. For some reason, everybody knew what Coming to America. So
Was it more or less winners than Ted is Coming?
More winners.
Okay.
We had a total of 3 winners. So.
Wow, all right. That's
yeah, and one of them I actually saw in person. I could have hand-delivered his prize package, but I still didn't.
I'm assuming Continuity Police Jason West is one of them.
He's one of the winners, but he's not the one I saw.
Oh, okay.
And I still didn't deliver it. But anyways, we are Movies On Up. That's the tagline. If you know what it is and you pick correct and we like you, you will join.
Where you see Dave in person.
The long list of winners. This week, very, very, very special episode, very close to my heart. Coming out on DVD this week, RoboCop from 2014, directed by Jose Padilla, starring Joel Kinnaman. Or Agent Holder from The Killing. So we're going to take a look at 2014's RoboCop, comparing it to 1987's classic. If you're a dude in your mid to late 20s and older, chances are you love RoboCop. So we just want to take a look at that and kind of compare the two. I watched the reboot, the remake, whatever you want to call it, and I had quite a few thoughts on it. So
I hope so, because we're doing an entire episode based on RoboCop.
You know, I have something to say when I actually prepare an outline, and it's not just made up as I go. Ryan will take over here. Let's compare some numbers.
Sure. Let's start with the aforementioned 1987 RoboCop. The budget on this film, $13 million. Now compare that to the budget for the reboot, remake, whatever you want to call it, $100 million. So this movie made for exactly, if I do the math right, carry the one, 13% of the newest budget. In 1987, July 17th, 1987 to be precise, this movie opened up with $8 million, which was number one just ahead of the reissued Snow White and Jaws 4. The movie went on to gross $53.4 million domestically, which places it 1,291 on the all-time domestic list. Now, sometimes it's really fun because I think you have a shot at guessing what's right above it and below it, but you've got no shot this time, so I'll just tell you. Right below it was a movie from 2005 called Yours, Mine, and Ours.
I love that movie.
Do you?
I legitimately love that
movie. The Dennis Quaid, Rene Russo jam?
Yeah.
Well, the movie directly above it, I'm going to guess you don't like. It is a family film sequel called Beethoven's Second. Not so much.
Some of Charles Grodin's finest work, probably.
Probably. Don't so much care for that movie. I didn't really have worldwide numbers for RoboCop, so we'll just stick with the domestic.
It wasn't as big of an issue in 87,
though, no,
worldwide.
No, now it wasn't.
That's where you make your money, is worldwide.
Worldwide is, of course, where most of the money from the 2014 RoboCop comes in. As I mentioned, it was budgeted for $100 million, this newest installment. Didn't quite make that opening weekend. It opened number three, Valentine's Day of this year, the year of our Lord 2014, with $21 million behind About Last Night and the number one movie that week. Dave, do you happen to know what it is? You've already mentioned it today.
What did I mention today?
It was the Lego movie.
Oh,
was
yeah,
number
I
one.
Love the Lego movie.
I'm sure you do. That was the number one movie, Valentine's Day weekend. Opened with $21 million, has gone on to gross $58.6 million domestically, raked in $184 million worldwide for a pretty hefty total. All-time domestically, the 2014 RoboCop ranks at 1161. Right below it, Sea of Love. And right above it in 1160th place, Jack, the Robin Williams joint. So that's right about the illustrious company that both RoboCops live in.
Yeah, quite different. I mean, the first one, $53 million on a $13 million budget. You take that into inflation, like, yeah, those are different numbers now, but that's a $40 million profit. I don't care what kind
Which
of
inflation.
I don't care what year you're in.
Right,
$40 million profit.
Your profit would inflate, too.
Yeah, plus not to mention everything that I remember it being a pretty decent-sized movie at the time, and then $53 million in 87 is nothing to sneeze at, and then it found even more life on DVD, and now, like,
DVDs, sequels, comic books. I mean,
like, even now, like, there's younger kids that love the original RoboCop. So
I want to party with those kids.
So a remake makes sense. I mean, in a way, it doesn't. Like, because it's, I don't know. It's so weird. But go back to the 87 one. I consider it a classic. I think it's, as far as action movies go, as far as especially sci-fi action movies go, I have no problem labeling it a classic. Everybody knows RoboCop. Everybody knows of RoboCop. Everybody's probably seen at least most of RoboCop. Everybody knows the story of RoboCop. So I absolutely think it's a classic. Why did it work so much?
In the 80s, specifically, I mean, this came late 80s, so you had the success of the original Terminator movie. He was a robot, but a robot in human skin. So it's not a giant leap to a cyborg, which essentially is what RoboCop is. You had Blade Runner from the early 80s, which maybe that was a robot cop, or maybe it was just a cop hunting robots. But either way, sci-fi was really, really popular in the 80s. And there were some, I mean, Terminator and Blade Runner are two great examples of that genre. And I think that RoboCop is more of an action movie than really either of those two are. Now, the Terminator sequel, one of the best action movies of all time, but that happened a little bit later. So I think the idea of man and machine, it was a good time for that. I mean, Lawnmower Man was early on in the 90s, but, you know, less than 5 years, that was 91,
yeah.
Right?
Ish, yeah.
Ish, yeah. So you're looking at 3-4 years after RoboCop to have, like, complete synergy between man and machine. So I think it was just, it was something that it was on our collective minds at the time, and this was a very accessible example of that. From, I'm on record as saying I love Paul Verhoeven. This was his first big introduction.
He knows what he's doing. I won't go as far as say I love him.
I will.
He knows what he's doing.
I love Paul Verhoeven. I've got no qualms in saying that. I think he makes a great action movie, and even a great sci-fi action movie, and I think he made it accessible to a movie-going audience. It wasn't so... Terminator is a great movie, but that can be kind of... You get your time travel, you got your hard future sci-fi. This was just like... It was a cop movie.
And that's where I think you're definitely onto something. Because even in the... I'm not looking up the years on all these movies, but in like a 5 or 6 year span, either way, you had the Terminator, Terminator 2, Predator, Running Man, Time Cop. You had all these like sci-fi action movies. Like that was the big thing. But most of those were led by your Schwarzenegger, Demolition Man with Stallone, your Van Damme. Like they had the big time action stars. Peter Weller didn't fit that bill.
He's a character actor.
He's a character actor. And I think you were going to see a movie and not a Stallone movie or not a Schwarzenegger movie. And it was more based in, I use this term loosely and I'm air quoting it. It was based in reality. Yes, it was in the future, but it was bringing that action sci-fi to just, oh, this is just Detroit. These are just people living in Detroit. Like, I could see Detroit getting wrecked by crime. Like, I could see anywhere USA getting wrecked by crime and, like, us having to get to this. Like, it made sense. Like, I think it was more relatable. Plus, it was badass.
Yeah, and you mentioned Schwarzenegger. He was originally considered by the studio for the role of RoboCop, but the size of a suit they'd have to make to put Schwarzenegger in would, I think one of the producers said he would end up looking like the Michelin Man. So that's why they didn't get somebody like a Stallone or a Schwarzenegger that was all shredded, or Dolph Lundgren, who would have been awesome.
And they were all too big that they wouldn't want to do a movie with half their face covered.
$13 million budget. I mean, how much would you have had to pay Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
You know, in 1987.
To have his face covered for 90% of the movie. But I think when I think back to it, it was, along with everything else we've said, it was fun. It was just a fun movie. The deaths, the violence, it was so extreme. And like I said, Verhoeven knows what he's doing. Like, he knows where to turn it up to 11 at. And RoboCop did. The acid scene. Everybody loves that scene. Like, everybody knows about that scene. Everybody has a feeling about the acid scene. So it was just fun in a violent way. Like, I went to the movies and I got this extreme violence in this action movie that I was looking for. Plus, maybe to a lesser extent, the social commentary. Like, I think it's
not as flashy, but it's in there. And that's why I love Verhoeven, because if you want to talk about violence and social commentary, RoboCop's a great example. And I think Starship Troopers is as well. And they both have the violence, and then they have, you know, the humorous interludes, where in RoboCop it was the commercials, it was the news reports. And in Starship Troopers it was, want to know more? That's where I think Verhoeven, just to lighten things up, and he had to do it in RoboCop, because that movie originally received an X rating, and it had multiple cuts trying to get it down to that R so he could get the studio release. And one of the ways he did that was to add those humorous interludes. But I don't think he does it necessarily for shock value. It is...
No, it works. Like, it's not... This is going to sound weird, because I'm going to contradict myself, kind of. I don't feel like RoboCop was violent for the sake of being violent. But it was super violent, and that's kind of what it was. So, like, it was extremely violent, super violent, ultra violent. But that's how it was. It was by design. Like, it wasn't just to do it. It was because...
It didn't seem out of place.
It didn't seem out of place. Like, that's the tone he did in the, you know, the boardroom scene and just all that stuff. Like, just this cop just blowing the crap out of people. Like, it was just something funny. It was because you had... Who's the main bad guy in here? Yeah, you got Kurtwood Smith, but... Ultimately, what's the driving force behind the evil in this movie?
It's Dick.
Corporations. So you got big business, which is evil.
Well, not even that's. I know we'll get to it, but that's one of the things that I really like about this one, especially after watching the second one. Was OCP is not necessarily an inherently evil organization. You have the old man that they keep talking about, who genuinely wants to do nice things for Detroit, wants to bring in money, but then you have his number two, who's a real D-hole. And that's the bad guy. As bad as Kurtwood Smith is, you know, he works for him. So
yeah. So I mean, it's just
Dick was a dick,
and just the social commentary. I think back to the club was a big thing at the time. So now you have the future version, the electric car that just fries people. And just like, that's what I mean about creating that world. It was a violent. He created a violent world, and I thought he did an awesome job of making Detroit what it was. Like, it felt like this just decrepit place.
And if you look now in 2014,
it's not nearly as nice as it was in RoboCop.
Yeah, and I know some of the outskirts, the suburbs of Detroit, are really, really nice, but inner city Detroit, sure, it's not necessarily run by a drug kingpin and a privatized police force, but you know, you're starting to see that. And to, you know, mention that in 1987, we have privatized prisons. We have, you know, private security firms, which are and have been for, you know, maybe even a decade, kind of an in vogue thing. So they hit that right on the head in 1987.
So that was 87s. And it was, I mean, it spawned a really good sequel. RoboCop 2 is one of those. It's like Terminator 2, where yeah, one of them's better than the other probably, but I hold them pretty level on that. RoboCop and RoboCop 2, I don't know that I could tell you which one I like more because I like a lot about both of them.
Not so much.
They were going to make a third one with Fred Decker directing and John Robert Burke stepping in, but I don't think that ever happened where he could actually fly. I like to pretend that never took place. But so then flash forward to, 27 years later, RoboCop comes out. This movie seemed like it was being made for a long time. We just hit the two-year episode a few months, like last month or so. It feels like we were talking about the RoboCop remake from the very beginning. And not just, 2 years is about reasonable for a movie to come out, but not so much now. Like, movies come out so much faster now, but it just seemed like the process of this seems so long, and then for it to be a $100 million budget and so hyped up to get a March release or February release, yeah. kind of spelled doom for it. I think I was more for it than you were because I'm not 100% anti-remake. I understand even if this movie was bad, it's not going to make me dislike the original anymore.
No.
So I was all for like a reboot, like a modern take on it. I don't think you were as on board with me, but
I wasn't as optimistic. That's fair to say. I did not think this movie was going to be good. And maybe I was predisposed to that line of thinking when I watched the movie, because I feel like it was proven to me that it wasn't very good after I watched it. But I'm not against remakes. I feel like I've said this a lot, maybe never louder than with the Spike Lee Old Boy remake, where if you're going to remake something, I want you to do it either in your style or I want you to give me a different perspective. I don't want someone to just go back and mine a property just to get more money out of it, which seems like what they're doing with RoboCop. A good example, at least for me, is the Maleficent thing. We've seen a bunch of Snow White movies over the last several years, but this one is from a different perspective. I don't feel like that's just mining Snow White for Shameless.
Sleeping Beauty. So.
Yeah, for Sleeping Beauty. Whatever. One of those Disney princess ones. I don't think it's ripping off Aladdin or the Frog Princess. Whatever. That's my point. I don't feel like it was, I guess, updated a little bit, but I don't know that there was enough difference. There were differences, and a lot of the differences I liked.
Here's where I'm torn on that. Because
you don't like it either.
It's not that I don't like it. I don't know if I like it. Like, there's stuff I like about it, but, like, I haven't broke down likes and dislikes. My dislikes is about twice as much.
You don't like it, then.
It's not that, though. Like, I do like that you update it a little bit. You don't have the clunky RoboCop. You have he's fast, he jumps, he's more tactical.
But that's a technology thing.
And I get that, but I like that.
From 1987 to 2014,
now. So they updated that. I like that.
Well, they had to, because we just couldn't make that movie.
Here's I see your point about doing it your own way. And I feel like if you look at one of you're just copying it and you're mimicking it, and 10 is you went and you made your own movie, I think this is at like a 5 or a 6. I feel like you...
That's fair.
I feel like there were times where I really felt like it wanted to be its own movie, but that something was holding it back. Whether that was the studio or whether he just... I don't know. I feel like in an alternate universe, this movie's 2.5 hours long and it's fantastic. But it just feels like... something just feels like it's missing. And that's why I can't commit to liking it or liking it, because I'd probably give it a 5 out of 10 because there's enough I like about it to not lambaste
it. To give it 5, and there's enough you hate about it
to
give
not
it
give
5.
It more than 5, yeah. So, I mean... I like that it was tactical. That was a technology thing. I kind of liked the approach with Gary Oldman, where the scientist was more involved.
Played a larger role.
Was like a father thing, and it was like, I liked that about it. This is his creation. He's invested in it. I like that. I like that they tried to do more with Abbie Cornish. I like that they got Abbie Cornish. They got a legitimate actress in there. We'll get back to this point, though. I like that they tried to make more about the life, because that was barely touched on. Really.
Yeah.
He drove by the house a couple times.
He went in the house, but no, you're right. And that there were instances where they did change things up, and I thought that was good. I enjoyed the thing with the wife. There was a little bit about the son in the 87 one, but it just never got there the same way that the new one did. And I liked the Samuel L. Jackson character. I thought being maybe
which he was the commercials. He replaced the commercials.
Lisa and the other guy.
Yeah.
Whoever the hell that dude was. I liked some of the things they did. I liked Michael Keaton's character. So some of the changes they made I thought were really, really good. Now, I don't think that any of the villains in the new one were... Keaton was fine. None of them were as charismatic and scary as the dad from that 70s
show. That's my first dislike we're going to get to. But before we go, my likes. It was Tactical Wife Approach, Oldman. And I like that it felt a little bit more ambitious. I felt like it was trying to be something more than just a robot cop shooting people. Kind of. It tried to be that. Not saying it ended up being that. But my biggest complaint about the movie is you look at Kurtwood Smith in the first one, and then you look at the kid and Tom Noonan in the second one. The originals had really great villains. Phenomenal villains that were just brutal. The scene in RoboCop 2 where they're cutting the guy open to get him to talk. And she's like, well, you said you just wanted to scare him. And Tom Noonan goes, he looks scared, doesn't he? And it's like, those are the kind of villains RoboCop needs to go against.
Or anyone needs to. You need to have villains that you can legitimately see as pose a threat.
And I liked Michael Keaton. I liked what he did, but it wasn't the bad guy I wanted in a RoboCop movie because I have a hard time looking at him as a villain. He was a business guy and who was in the politics of business. So his intentions were there. His intentions weren't evil.
They rolled all of the OCP guys from the original
into
one.
Michael Keaton.
Right. So you couldn't have... There was a dichotomy in 87. You had, like, the good executive, and then you had, like, some ones that you wanted to see die.
Yeah.
But in this one, it was all just different sides of Keaton.
And what makes me mad is that you could make this movie and keep Keaton. You can keep him the exact same. I'm for that because I like the approach of... He's a guy with power. He's the guy that, you know, he has the power to create RoboCop. He has the power to destroy RoboCop. I like that. I like that everything, it's for a bigger agenda, but it's ultimately for his agenda. But then you got Jackie Earle Haley's character, who's like a robot wrangler, who's completely anti-Joel Kinnaman, like doesn't want this half machine, half human. And I feel like he was wasted. I really feel like he was wasted, and he could have been that. What if earlier in the movie, something drastic, after RoboCop, after Jackie Earle Haley makes his case known that he's very anti-RoboCop, what if something happens and Jackie Earle Haley dies and comes back as a halfling?
A half-halfling? It's like a quarterling.
half-man, half-robot, hell-bent on destroying RoboCop. Even if you don't have him half-machine, half-robot, have him hell-bent on destroying RoboCop. I feel like he was wasted. He could have been... this character that stopped at no cost or stopped at nothing to reach that goal of destroying RoboCop. And he just, not only was he wasted for his motivation and everything, the death was completely wasted. Like it was the equivalent of an off-screen death. If it was even a death, I don't even know. Like they had so many stun guns
it's
in this
for
movie.
The sequel.
Yeah. Like I feel like he could have stepped in and done that Tom Noonan thing, that Kurtwood Smith thing. And they just didn't let him. So I don't feel like there was a real villain in the movie. There was no real bad guy.
No, I mean, at any point in the movie, I don't know that I really felt like, even before he became RoboCop, that he was in any danger. I mean, the drug guy, I guess, that they Holder and Omar were trying to bust at the beginning of the movie, didn't really feel that menacing, not nearly as menacing as Kurtwood Smith. And even after he became RoboCop and he had the run-ins with Ed 209, like, he got shot up there. But that was really only about one time in the movie where RoboCop really got dinged around.
Now, I do like the cutting off the arm. That was pretty badass.
Yeah.
Or the shooting the arm
right,
off.
That's
that was
cool.
That was cool.
I think that's really the only memorable thing about this movie.
Oh,
but
totally
when you talk
is.
About 87, you know, you remember the acid scene. You remember Peter Weller's death. You remember... shooting through the girl's dress. Like, there are so many, maybe iconic is using a bit of hyperbole, but they're memorable moments from 87 that I don't get from 2014.
My other big complaint is the lack of violence. And we'll get back to, I'll put a kind of pinhole in this now because we're going to get back to it later and discuss it a little bit more. So I want to, but it was the lack of violence. There was no iconic deaths or anything, but we'll get back to that. I talked up the wife approach with Abby Cornish. Like, I like that they tried to do it, but they did it terribly. She's a phenomenal actress that I felt like, it felt like her direction in this movie was, okay, Abby, you know how you're this phenomenal actress, you carry great emotional impact, you're just really, really good, you command the screen. This is an action movie, don't do any of that. And that's how I felt, because she was so bland, and I know better than to know that she's not a bland actress.
Well, what you have to, when you get the DVD, you have to watch it for the director's commentary, where they tell you that Abby Cornish is actually a android herself.
A RoboCop.
Right. That's for the sequel.
She's so good, and I like the idea that they tried that, but it just didn't, it was wasted, and especially his death scene, which I didn't like his death. His death was lame and boring, where Peter Weller's was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it was lame and boring. You have, there's an opportunity to let Abby Cornish really let it go and be really powerful. Not,
they cut before the emotion.
Yeah, and then she walks on porch for two steps and then runs back in the house, and it's like, okay, like, let's not utilize the cast. We've done a good job casting this movie. Let's not let them do anything.
Maybe that was another nod to the 87 flick, because that was some of the footage that got cut out to not get the X, was Nancy Allen over Peter Weller as he was like a piece of Swiss cheese. They had to cut that down because there was a lot of gore. Maybe that's what they did for this one, too, so they could keep the PG-13.
Yeah, we'll get back to, again, we're going to tease that again. We're going to get back to the PG-13, but the death didn't just, it felt bland to me. I didn't understand a lot of the science in it, like the programming and stuff. They tried to dumb it down, but then they dumbed it down so much to where it just didn't make sense. Like, oh, he's overriding the system. How? None of it made sense. Like, the whole, oh, his emotions are coming through. Like, there was no consistency there. It was like they could control him when they wanted to, but then he could break it anytime he wanted. Like, I didn't feel like there was any conflict. Like, if he wanted to do something, he would just do it. And that is, we'll get to it.
I think that was like just the internal struggle that was done maybe more ham-handedly in this one than it was in the 87. The whole thing was, you know, is he still in there? You know, is Murphy still in there? He doesn't remember his name and all of that stuff. But even the whole time, I mean, you could tell from the gun twirl that there were still personalities of the man that was in the RoboCop in 87. And this one, I don't think you ever got that impression that he wasn't in there.
No, he always felt like Kinnaman.
Right.
He always felt like Agent Holder there. Like, at no point did he feel like he was a robot. I mean,
except for the fact that he acted like a robot through the entire movie.
I'm getting there. the helmet off. Like, I didn't like the scenes where you see what's left of him. I just thought that was hokey and lame. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have the chops to pull that off. But
in fairness, like, his one scene was like, okay, Joel, you want to emote? Here you go. Emote your heart out for 5 minutes, and then we're going to put the mask back on.
Emote your heart out, but not too far, because it's all you have left.
Pretty much, yeah.
Then there was no social commentary in the movie. What made RoboCop was so good was the jabs at just pop culture and where we're headed, and there was none of that in this movie, which maybe that's just a me thing, but I disliked that. Again, it goes back to them trying to be ambitious, but yet maybe not enough. It felt like they tried to fit too much in here and just had to leave it all out. Like, I'm watching it thinking, like, this feels like a 6-episode miniseries. Like, if this was like a 6-episode HBO run, like, they could do every story they want. They could build the Oldman-Kinnaman relationship, the Cornish-Kinnaman relationship, the partner that relationship was never
Omar.
That relationship was never built. When that's the best part about the original is Nancy Allen's part and that relationship between Lewis and Murphy, it just felt rushed, and it felt like they could have done so much more. Then you would have been able to do more with Jackie Earle Haley's. I just felt like they had all these good seeds planted. They just didn't let it grow.
What they harvested from that was crap.
It's like they planted all these amazing seeds in, like, late September.
That'll come to fruition in the sequel.
So those are most of my complaints. We're going to get into a bigger discussion now. Ryan pulled an article from Forbes. I'm not one of those that's anti-PG-13 remakes or PG-13 in general. PG-13 horror movies, I don't automatically think it's going to suck because it's PG-13. Even the Die Hards, when Die Hard 4 came out, I never thought, like, oh, it's going to suck because it's PG-13. RoboCop was the exception. RoboCop, I saw it was PG-13, and that kind of is when I lost faith in the movie. Because you can't be true to the source material. You can't be a legitimate homage to the 1987 RoboCop if you're going to try to squeeze it in PG-13. And it showed. I mean, the 87 Peter Weller shooting the people through the dress, just shooting dudes all over the place. Most of Kinnaman's work was with stun guns. Like, he was stunning people, and there were no memorable deaths. That's my biggest complaint about Keaton's death, is that do something cool. Give me something awesome visually, not just he can't shoot him. Like, he can't just pull the gun up and shoot him. So let him do something creative. Either have him shoot through the floor to make him fall, or shoot something over that falls on top of him. Something creative and something original other than just, oh, I can't shoot him in the chest. Oh, yes, I can. All right, game over. Like, it just, like, that's also goes back to the inconsistent with the programming. Like, oh, he can't do anything if you tried. Well, he just did. So, like, give me something more. But just the PG-13, you take the 1987 RoboCop, you make a PG-13, you don't have a classic sci-fi action movie that we talked about. Like,
well, you don't have Paul Verhoeven directing it, for starters.
Yeah, you definitely don't. But yeah, Ryan found this article on Forbes that kind of talks about our point.
It was written by Scott Mendelson. It came out the 27th, so a couple weeks after opening week, again, Valentine's Day of this year. This article was on the 27th, so just about 2 weeks later. And I think when the PG-13 thing hit, you had your doubts, and so did I. And I started thinking back to the Alien versus Predator movie, the first one that was rated PG-13. I thought to myself, all right, we've got, at this point, four Alien movies, all of which are rated R. You've got two Predator movies, both of which are rated R. How in the hell can they make this PG-13? Now, I did kind of just cross my fingers and say, all right, maybe they'll find a way. And they didn't. When I saw PG-13 here, that was my first thought, is I sort of smell a rat. And on the one hand, you can understand the thought process that the studio is going through. If we make this R, we're limiting the amount of people that can see the movie. If we make it PG-13, then you can have a bunch of 15 and 16-year-old guys like, yeah, I'm going to go see RoboCop this weekend. And what I thought was really interesting that Mendelson did was he looked at the ticket-buying audience for opening weekend, and 64%, let's look at it from the flip side, 36% of people that bought tickets to RoboCop were under the age of 17. Only 36%. So that means everybody else could have seen an R-rated RoboCop. The majority of the audience that was interested in this movie, that wanted to see this movie opening
64%.
Weekend. 64%. Right. Could have seen this if it was rated R. And to compound that, all right, maybe, they don't know that young kids aren't going to want to see it. They open it up on Valentine's Day, which, if you had an R-rated action movie, would have been a nice counter-programming or
to The Vow or whatever.
Yeah, to whatever rom-com was out, and the Lego movie. You look at the Lego movie, that's where all the kids that were 15, 16, that's where they went. That's where everybody went. It was a huge movie. It was a great movie. But to put out a PG-13, you're kind of going halfway. You're pissing off 64% of the audience.
Because of that 64% that bought tickets opening weekend,
most of them were over 25.
Most of them were over 25. Of those 64%, how many more of them could there have been? I would have made it more of an opening weekend priority if it were R-rated. And I know I'm not alone there.
Oh, no. I think the fact, and I guess it's really an opinion at this point, but it's backed up by, I don't know if it's a thing where because people feel like this, they have this opinion, then it makes it fact, or if it's fact and that's what drives the opinion. It may be a tail wagging the dog scenario here, but there's this thought that if it's rated PG-13, that it can't be as good. It can't be as entertaining as the first one, and people are much more likely to stay away. So, again, 64% of the audience that saw it opening weekend could have seen it rated R. So this mythical, like, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old that the studio seemed to want to cater to, which is why you get a fair amount of these horror movies that are at PG-13, which is, why you get some of the comedies that look like they probably should be an R, but they get that hard PG-13. It's because they want to make sure that they capture this young audience, 12 to 17-year-olds. He went on to say that 78% of people that are frequent moviegoers are people that can buy a ticket to an R-rated movie. It's really just these 12 to 17-year-olds that make up about 15% of frequent moviegoers. So when you have, you know, a comedy that you think, well, let's not make it an R-rated comedy because that can't work. I mean, look no further than Hangover 1, 2, and Ted. Obviously, that scenario doesn't hold water anymore. But it's this thought of trying to shoot for the biggest piece of the pie you can get and missing it because you're not hitting this 12 to 17 demo and you're alienating the people that would want to see it.
Yeah, the people that are buying tickets.
The people that you talked about at the beginning of the podcast, people mid-20s and up that saw RoboCop as a kid and would love to see an updated R-rated version of it now.
Yeah, or even the ones that a little bit older than me that have kids that are 14 or 15 that can still get them in, they would go. It's just, and I mean, maybe it's a discussion for another day, but is the rating system, I mean, obviously it's flawed, but how is 17 the go-to cutoff? Why not 16? 16, show me a driver's license, you can get in. Like, why not 15?
Why not 18?
Why not 13? It's PG-13, not PG-17. I just don't understand the rating system, and maybe I'm in the minority. It's not Hollywood's job to raise my kids, really. It's not their job to cater what they see or not. Like, if Kayla sneaks out when she's 15 and wants to buy a movie ticket, let her see what she wants. Like, kudos to her for getting out on my watch. But, like, I don't care what she goes to see. I'm already pissed. Like, it doesn't matter. It's not like I'm going to be more mad because she saw an R-rated RoboCop and then over.
Would you be more mad if she went to go see, snuck out of the house to see a PG-13 RoboCop?
RoboCop, yeah.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah. So I just
he's got better taste than that.
I just don't understand it, but it's a valid point, and that's, it's one of those things that, it's one of those myths that might go away eventually, because you look at Total Recall, that bombed. This, half of its budget, it's essentially a bomb.
This,
like, domestically
here, yeah.
Domestically, it's a bomb. You look at R-rated comedies now that make money. Like, you look at R-rated movies that make money. The rating system's so flawed, and it's so dumb, and it's just, I don't know. You shouldn't be able to rate something that makes me hesitant about whether or not I want to see the movie. But once RoboCop was rated PG-13, I lost like 80% of my interest in this movie.
I think that's when I started to not trust it. I had my suspicions, and then it's a shame that a rating can do that. Does it mean, you know, if a drama's rated PG-13, do I look at it less than an R-rated one? No, I don't.
No, and I don't judge them by the ratings all that much. But
no,
when the precedent is set, RoboCop was R-rated. I don't love Die Hard because of the R-rated violence. So when Die Hard 4 comes out at PG-13, I don't care. Is it still John McClane shooting people? Whatever. But RoboCop was R-rated. Most of what I loved about it. You can't do the acid scene in PG-13. You just can't. You can't do all the iconic scenes. You can't have Peter Weller's death in PG-13. So everything I love about that movie had everything to do with it being unlimited as far as what it could do.
The Die Hard example is pretty interesting, and Mendelsohn did write a bit about that. When you look at A Good Day to Die Hard and Live Free or Die Hard, one of them was PG-13, and then they were like, all right, well, let's make the next one R. So,
and it did even worse.
It did even worse, but really, I mean, the PG-13 one was pretty violent for being a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, that's what I mean, is it didn't take anything away. Like, you watch Die Hard 1 and Die Hard 4, they don't feel that much different.
Some of the F-bombs.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really just about it, mostly.
Which isn't why I loved that movie.
Right. You want to hear John McClane say, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, I get it. But even in the PG-13 one, like, I thought they did a decent job in the movie, and I loved the marketing. I may have sent you a picture when I was in L.A., and I saw a bus ad for that movie that said, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, and then that's where the sign ended. And I thought that was so brilliant. And yes, you can have a Die Hard movie, an action movie, and it can be good at PG-13. But RoboCop seemed like a very specific kind of action movie that you can't do as PG-13.
No. In Nightmare on Elm Street, you look at that. We did a Nightmare on Elm Street episode over whatever, last Halloween.
It's probably October.
The deaths, like, we went over the deaths. Like, you can't do those kind of deaths in PG-13. So there it's relevant. The rating can be relevant. I'm not saying it's relevant all the time, but if something about it, like the Johnny Depp scene in Nightmare on Elm Street, you can't do that PG-13. And that's one of the most iconic deaths of the entire series. So screw PG-13.
12 to 17-year-olds.
Well, don't screw them. It's illegal.
Fair enough. By and large, they don't have jobs. They do not have a great deal of disposable income.
Don't cater to them.
No, that's what I'm saying. Cater to the people that have the money, that are taking the 12, 13, 14-year-olds.
Make me, instead of wanting to drop off my 15-year-old at the movies, make me want to take my 15-year-old to the movie. You just doubled your ticket sales.
And I suspect next week we might have a couple of those on our list of our five favorite animated movies, which may not necessarily be for kids or for adults, but works well that way. Take a lesson, RoboCop.
But real quick, before we go, overall thoughts on Kinnaman?
I thought he was just as bad as Peter Weller was.
I love Joel Kinnaman on The Killing. Agent Holder is one of my favorite TV characters.
He's good as Pusher.
Yeah, he's good as Pusher. But he's one of those that he falls into the Charlie Hunnam range because his voice, like, he was Holder in this movie. Like, him as his Agent Murphy was just Agent Holder. Same voice and everything. And whereas Charlie Hunnam, I think he only has one American voice. He has that gruff Jax Teller voice. Did it in Pacific Rim. Did it in everything he'd done where he's American. It's that just gruff American voice, and it doesn't sound right. So Kinnaman, I think that might be the only American voice he can do, is that whatever you want to call Agent Holder. Like, I feel like that's just the only voice he can do, and it worked fine as Murphy, not as much as RoboCop. Didn't help that they didn't put much modulation. They did like nothing on his voice, but even just some of his tone and delivery didn't feel very mechanic at all, even though it was very dry and bland. Like, it was very stiff but not mechanic. But I don't know, I liked him enough. I just feel like he might have held the movie back a little bit, which is a shame because I like him a lot. But with all that said and done, would you see a RoboCop 2?
I feel like I've planted enough seeds that I would be okay with a RoboCop 2. But really, when it comes down to it, no. If they do it the same way they did this one, no, I'm not interested. It's, to me, this is, we talked about Gino, Godzilla in name only. This is Rhino, RoboCop in name only.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it doesn't even have the holster. The leg holster is one of the coolest things. How do you lose that? Like, that was awesome.
I mean, there were plenty of nods to, like, the sound.
I mean, the theme song when it first opens up. Like,
I got excited then.
If you had doubts about the movie, the opening credits come on, and okay, I mean, I'm on board.
It's all downhill
from
there.
Yeah, yeah. Don't get too excited. Spoiler alert. But, I mean, like, I liked a lot about it, but I disliked probably even more about it. So
you don't like them. Just say that you don't
like
the movie.
I can't say I don't like the movie because I'll watch it again sometime. Like, I'll check it out. If it's on TV, I'll watch it. The action things, we didn't even talk about the action scenes. I thought they were pretty well done. I thought they were awesome. I liked a lot of the tactical stuff, like the seeing, like, okay, if I hit the bike here, it's going to go here. I liked some of that stuff. And I thought him fighting all those T-9000s or whatever they were called. The
robots.
Yeah, I thought that stuff was done well. I wish he wasn't shooting dudes with stun guns. Like, that's the, and I wish there was a little bit more. I never really felt like RoboCop was in danger. Probably
exactly.
Because he didn't face any, like, brutal villains. So, I don't know. I would see a RoboCop 2, perhaps, just because there was enough here that's like, it should be good. It should be really, really good, but it's not.
The good news is I don't think you'll have to wait very in a long line at the theater.
No, no. But so that was our RoboCop discussion. Hopefully, I don't know. If you're still listening, you're probably stuck along the whole way. But
either it's because you really liked the original one.
Or you haven't seen the new one and
you're wondering,
you want to see
yeah.
if you should.
No.
I think that's unfair. I think it's worth a watch. I think it's worth a watch if you go in with tempered expectations and realize, like, I might like some stuff about this, but you can't tell me you disliked everything about it.
No, I didn't. There were parts of it that I liked, but did I think it was worth my time? No.
I think it's worth a watch, at the very least. If it shows up on Netflix, pop it on for a little bit, at least.
Or watch the Lego movie.
Lego Movie's fantastic.
Exactly.
That's
going to
come up
time.
In our halftime show for sure.
I'm sure it will.
In about a month. But next week, we'll be talking favorite animated family movies. I hope it's animated family movies.
It's animated movies.
Oh, because I did animated family movies.
That's fine.
So.
They're animated. It'll be all right.
So that'll be next week. Until then, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. Thanks for the emails. We got a few emails after the anniversary shows with some show ideas that we'll definitely be doing at some point. Just got to figure out when to fit them in there. But thanks for all the feedback about the anniversary episode, and thanks for listening. And until next week.
Get up.